Good day, and welcome to the Ontex Q3 2019 results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. Throughout today's call, all the lines will be in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. At that time, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Charles Desmarties, CFO. Please go ahead, sir.
Excuse me, it's Philip Ludwig, Investor Relations. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our Q3 trading update call. Just a few housekeeping issues before we get right into it. I would like to remind everyone that the safe harbor statements apply to this presentation and to our subsequent remarks and Q&A session. Also, firstly, as normal, the comments we make today about revenue are on a like-for-like basis or at constant currencies, except where otherwise indicated. Secondly, as a reminder, we adopted the IFRS 16 leases accounting standards at the start of 2019 and have provided, as in the past quarters, Q3 and 9 months 2018 numbers restated pro forma for the sake of comparability in this in our press release and presentation today. And finally, definitions of alternative performance measures are in our documents. And now I would like to hand over the call to Charles Desmarties.
Thank you, Philippe, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for being with us for our Q3 2019 conference call. Today, I will start with brief remarks on our Q3 2019 highlights, then discuss our key performance indicators in accordance with our usual format for quarterly trading updates. I will wrap up with our full year outlook, and after that, we will be happy to take your questions. So before we get into the trading detail, let's look at our Q3 highlights on slide 5. Our Q3 performance shows that we are starting to turn a corner and gradually gathering momentum, very much in line with what we expected and have shared in our 2019 outlook with you in the past two results releases and conference calls. So indeed, Q3 was the first quarter this year in which we recorded both group like-for-like sales and adjusted EBITDA improvement at constant currency compared with the same period of 2018. So we continue to very strictly manage our working capital, which led to a further reduction of net debt. And finally, our Transform to Grow, or T2G program, is in full implementation at this moment, with our commercial and operational work stream now start to show the positive effects that will gradually make their way into our numbers. So let's see now on slide 6 how these Q3 highlights are reflected in our key financials for the quarter. So Ontex Group revenue stood at €574.4 million in Q3, an increase of 0.2% like-for-like, with positive price mix in all categories and higher revenue from Ontex local brands. Our adjusted EBITDA rose 0.5% at constant currency to €65.8 million, with adjusted EBITDA margin slightly up at 11.6%. Finally, we saw a further reduction in net debt in the quarter. Net debt stood at €875.7 million at the end of September 2019, down €23 million, or 2.6%, versus net debt at the end of June 2019. This is also below the level at the end of Q1 of this year, and actually this is below the level in all quarters of 2018, pro forma for IFRS 16, which, as Philippe mentioned earlier, is applied since January 1st, 2019. Our leverage ratio was 68 times, at the end of September. So overall, we are delivering the gradual improvement in performance that we said we were expecting in our last call with you. So our Q3 performance underpins our earlier statements that H2 will be better than H1. So please move now to slide number 8. We're reporting revenue of €574.4 million for the third quarter of this year at constant currencies, increasing 0.2% like-for-like, as mentioned earlier. This performance marks continued sequential improvement in like-for-like sales since the start of this year. We recorded higher revenue in AMEAA and healthcare, up respectively by 6.6% and 2.1% like-for-like versus Q3 2018, driven by higher volumes. Like-for-like revenue evolution remained negative in Europe, but the year-end trend continued to improve in line with expectations, and we'll get back to this. Volumes were down 1.8% overall, mainly due to the contract losses in Europe over the past year. We recorded a positive price mix evolution across all categories, with a positive impact of sales of 2% overall in the period. We also benefited in the quarter from a positive currency effect of 6.8 million or plus 1.2% compared with Q3 2018, leading to a 1.4% increase in reported revenue to 574 million euro. Let's move now to the category review on slide 9. In the third quarter, baby care sales came in at 340.9 million euros and made up nearly 60% of Q3 group sales, posting growth of 1.5% like-for-like, driven by solid revenue performance of our brands in IMEAA. Sales of retailer brands in Europe were below last year, but the trend improved compared with the first 6 months of 2019, partly thanks to growth in baby pants. We'll get back to this meaningful shift in like-for-like revenue evolution trend. Sales in the adult category were 171.9 million euros, making up 30% of group sales in Q3, and were stable in the quarter compared with Q3 2018. Sales in institutional channels grew, while revenue was 2% lower in retail channels. Revenue of Ontex brands in IMEA grew. Sales of adult pants were higher than in the same quarter last year. Pant care sales came in at 53.2 million euros, representing just under percent of the group sales in Q3, and were 4.1% lower than in Q3 last year. This decrease reflects lower volumes, related to contract losses of retailer brands in Europe in the past year, Europe where most of our femcare revenue is generated. The impact of contract losses were partly mitigated by higher sales of organic cotton tampons, which posted a strong increase compared with the same period last year. So let's move now to the review of our three divisions, and we'll start with Europe on slide 10. Europe reported sales of 237 million at constant currencies. The revenue evolution trend improved in Q3 2019 compared with Q1 and Q2. As a reminder, Q1 like-for-like was negative 6.7%. Q2 like-for-like revenue evolution was negative 10% and marked the low point in Europe revenue evolution trend as reported in July. So Q3, even though it was still 6% down versus a year ago, posted a meaningful improvement in trend. As in the first two quarters of the year, the lower revenue was due to lower volume on the back of contract losses over the past 12 months. Most large countries in the division reporting strong promotional activity by the leading international diaper brands, making for a highly competitive market environment. However, we expect that the revenue evolution trend reported in Q3 will continue in Q4 based on organic growth of our large customer base and the lower impact of contract losses on a like-for-like comparison basis. Overall, the impact of currency evolutions compared with Q3 2018 was limited at 1 million euros, so that our reported revenue was 238 million, down 5.6%. So as part of the T2G program, announced in May, several actions are being implemented to raise further the level of support to customers and grow their retailer brands, solidifying our position as the leading supplier in all categories of personal hygiene. So this supports our view that like-for-like revenue trend should improve progressively across the next quarters. Finally, following the success of our baby diaper online subscription offering launched last year in France, we initiated this activity in the Benelux during the summer. Move now, please, to slide 11 for America, Middle East, Africa, and Asia division review. This division posted a solid Q3, with sales standing at 231 million euros at constant currencies, and reported sales at 227 million euros. Like-for-like revenue increased by 6.6% in the third quarter versus the same period last year, confirming the solid like-for-like growth trend of the first two quarters. Reported growth was positive 9.5%. Sales of Ontex brands, which is the focus of this division, were higher in all three categories and nearly all geographies. In the Americas, revenue grew both in Brazil and Mexico, thanks to solid consumer demand for a portfolio of local brands. U.S. sales continued to be strong, nearly equaling the strong comparable in the same period last year. Finally, revenue in the Middle East, Africa, Asia also rose despite political and economic challenges in some markets. Our consistent growth across the IMEA division so far in 2019 rewards our approach of developing strong local brands through investment in innovation and productivity in developing markets, as well as lifestyle and retailer brands in North America. Let's turn now to the healthcare division on slide 12. Healthcare revenue increased by 2.1% like-for-like to $110 million on the back of increased sales of adult pens. This brings the nine-month evolution in line with market dynamics in this category. We reported higher revenue in self-pay channels while maintaining a disciplined approach in institutional channels where competitive pressures are higher. Changes in currencies had no meaningful impact on our sales compared with same quarter last year, so that our reported revenue for the division increased by 2.0% compared with the same period last year. So please turn now to page 13 to review our adjusted EBITDA performance. Adjusted EBITDA came in at €65.8 million at constant currency, and adjusted EBITDA margin stood at 11.6%, an improvement of 5 basis points compared with Q3 2018 restated pro forma for IFRS 16. So this marked the first time this year that we post growth in adjusted EBITDA margin at constant currency. So now looking at adjusted EBITDA for the first 9 months of 2019, as we said earlier, raw materials have been weighing on our profitability versus last year, although stabilized or even shown slight price decreases lately in the last quarters. But overall, for the first 9 months, higher raw material costs had a price negative impact of 176 basis points on our adjusted EBITDA margin. Positive mix and pricing evolutions that we highlighted earlier outweighed lower volumes for a positive impact of 90 basis points on EBITDA margin. Continued solid net savings were generated, resulting in a 76 basis point positive impact on adjusted EBITDA margin year on year. And finally, we continue to invest in sales and marketing to support future growth, which had a 29 basis point negative impact on our margin. So these key operating profitability factors just discussed resulted in adjusted EBITDA margin of 11.3% at constant currencies, 39 basis points lower than the 11.7% reported for the first 9 months of 2018, pro forma for IFRS 16. In Q3, foreign exchange variations had a positive impact on group revenue, as I mentioned earlier, but again had a negative impact on adjusted EBITDA of $4.4 million, more than we foresaw when reporting the H1 results. So this brings the nine-month impact to cumulative to 17.3 million euro negative, which is mainly due to the stronger U.S. dollar as a consequence of the large amount of raw materials purchased in dollar. On the basis of the current currency rates against the euro, we forecast an unfavorable currency effect of 20 to 22 million euro on our adjusted EBITDA for the full year compared with the full year 2018. So before moving to the outlook, I would like to highlight again that we're very pleased that we further contain our net debt and leverage ratio thanks to the mobilization of the whole company on working capital management. And we are confident that we'll repeat a strong free cash flow and leverage performance for the full year. So let's move now to the outlook on slide 15. Current levels of price raw material indices show a decreasing trend for most raw materials. Pricing, mix improvement, and cost savings actions are producing increasing effects in the second half of this year, so leading to improvement in revenue and adjusted EBITDA in H2 versus H1 2019. So therefore, we confirm our 2019 full-year outlook of broadly stable revenue at constant currency, with top-line growth in developing markets and lower revenues in developed markets, stable adjusted EBITDA at constant currencies, and CapEx of 4.5% to 5% of revenue, including T2G-specific CapEx. Our previous outlook for CapEx provided for CapEx of 4.5% to 5% of revenue, excluding T2G-specific CapEx. Now, the same percentage includes T2G CapEx, and our lower outlook for CapEx primarily reflects the revised phasing of CapEx between 2019 and 2020. So this concludes our presentations. Thank you for your attention. Charles Boisy is with us, and we'll be happy to take your questions now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please make sure the mute function on your phone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. And our first question comes from the line of Richard Withagen of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Let me ask two questions, please. First of all, you mentioned the raw material price indexes. Do you expect raw material price indexes to result in an improvement in gross margin next year? And the second question is on Brazil. Can you give an update of the competitive situation in Brazil and how the distribution of your products is progressing?
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Yola Charles speaking. So I'm very pleased to join the call. And thanks for your question. So your first question regarding raw material indices indeed is a very important one. As we said there, after a stabilization of the indices at an all-time high, we see a decreasing trend going forward. So consequently, you're right. As a consequence, this should help us in terms of adjusting our cost of goods sold in the future of the business, so namely 2020. These trends are, the inflection was really on Q4, and Q3 is starting a little bit, but mainly Q4 and next year. Now, we have to be very cautious because, as you know, we are not managing the indices. So trends can reverse very fast, and we've seen this in the past. What I can tell you is the last 2 years were at levels that were extremely high in the industry, probably the highest ever that we've seen. And as a consequence, it has put on the whole industry a lot of pressure on the gross margin, and we were part of those who suffered as well. Your second question regarding the competitive situation in Brazil and the impact, I would say, first of all, we have a very strong leadership team in Brazil, and that helps a lot to manage the business. It's fundamental. We believe that the people are making the business. And as you've seen, there are improvements step by step. As I said in previous calls, it's a long journey. Why? Because we have brought innovation. We changed several lines to bring new technology in Brazil to be advantage versus competition. Now, what needs to be done is to make sure that the consumers realize the better performance of our products and the improvements. And the trends are very slow because consumers don't change overnight. It takes months and months of marketing efforts, combining brand management as well as distribution efforts. So, yes, it's progressing. We've seen also an improvement, a steady improvement in the recent quarters. So we are confident. We are confident in the team. We are confident in the long-term evolution. And we are also very prudent because, as you know, in the history of the company, when we made this acquisition, we were expecting to buy something very different from what we had. So I think it needs to be cautiously managed.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Reg Watson of ING. Please go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to ask about the U.S. In your release, you mentioned that sales continue to be strong, nearly equaling the high comparable in the same period last year. I was under the impression that we could have expected growth in the U.S. because of the Walmart contract. So I'd like to get a little bit of color from you, please, on how things are going in the U.S. and what your expectation is for contract wins going forward.
So the beginning of the question was hard to hear, but I understand that you refer, of course, to the strong performance of the U.S. market, and where do we expect growth? Is it?
Yeah, that's a fair summary. I think it's the that you mentioned in the press release that you had a high comparable in the same period last year, but I would have expected with the Walmart contract that you should be delivering ahead of last year. So I'd like to understand what the dynamics are of what's taking place in the U.S. and when we can expect to see further growth and further expansion of contract wins in the U.S.
Well, what I will tell you is not the short-term answer, because the U.S. is a very long-term transformation for us. As you know, that Ontex, we were not significantly present in the U.S. several years ago. Thanks to the acquisition of the successful acquisition of Grupo Mabe, we've been able to tackle the U.S. market for the first time with real scale. We don't have yet manufacturing sites there, but we already have a scalable business with two components. It's very important. One is contract manufacturing, and one is retailer brands with several retailers. As we've said, yes, we started a relationship, a business relationship with a very large retailer in the U.S., and we believe that this relationship over time will strengthen based on the outcome of the performance and in terms of service level, in terms of quality, in terms of economics that we deliver with them. We are willing to partner with all the retailers in the U.S. like we do in Europe. And consequently, over time, it's clear that our ambition and our expectations are to grow in North America. And the cycling of one quarter versus another a year ago, depending on the ramp-up of distribution in depots or the activity of promotions on one month at a cut of a quarter, are, in all fairness, not my spot of attention. I'm really looking at the development of the business in the country. And yes, I believe that we will continue to grow in North America in 2020, just because we are planning indeed to bring innovation and to continue the development of our brands and retail brands in North America.
Reg, maybe just it's Philip Ludwig here, a housekeeping question. We started shipping, as announced last year, during Q2 2018. Hence, we cycled that in Q2 of this year, and we're moving into a for the large retailer brand diaper contract. So indeed, it's not it's in the base, if you like.
It is in the base. Yeah, I had expected the ramp would have taken slightly longer, but that's a fair enough observation.
Go ahead.
No. Do carry on. So that's fair enough. That sort of that explains the high comp number. And then I guess Charles, sorry, you were explaining how you see the future and the future contract wins for the U.S.
Yeah. There is another element that is probably minor in the grand scheme of the performance of all of the group, but it's very important strategically. Is the organic tampon and the organic fem care category that is a growing category in different developed markets. And, of course, the demand is extremely high. We still are suffering in terms of service levels, so that's one of the challenge. We cannot cope with the demand. But it's clear that it's a very interesting category. First of all, because it answers consumer trends, the request for women to get products that are much better, that are organic products, so it's very important for part of the consumers. It's a demand also from the retailers as well, because they want to follow the consumer demands. And I believe we are extremely well positioned on this category, because we have not only the sourcing of the raw material, but also the knowledge in terms of technology. Those products are more complex to manufacture than the classic products. And of course, this triggered some service level issues. But on the other side, we are preparing again for the long-term future of the category, and that's very important for us. And I must confess that the U.S. on this category are more advanced than some other regions in the world. So it's good that we are there with our U.S. partners.
Charles, speaking of the long-term future, how long before you have to make the decision as a management team to invest on manufacturing on the ground in the U.S.? Because as far as I'm aware, everything that you sell in the U.S. comes from outside the U.S.
Yeah, our vision, and as you can imagine, it would be very embarrassing to give you a timeline, so I won't answer directly to the question, and I apologize for that. But what I would like to tell you is what is very important is our objective is to get the best service level at the best economic conditions to serve the market. So, and of course, if the best way to do it is to put a facility in the U.S., it's exactly what we will do. Now, in all fairness, when we started the business, we generated from this business from the acquisition. It was sourced from Mexico. We have extended the sourcing from Mexico into Europe for some category or some products. At the end of the day, until it's competitive, it's working well, and we need to make sure that we serve properly all our customers. Then, of course, as I said before, when we'll get to a certain level of size, it will be an obvious decision to say, okay, let's convert or let's migrate part of the sourcing from closed markets into the U.S. markets. It is a request. It's for us. It's a matter of time. We don't want to put a timeline. And by the way, it's very important to keep in mind that from a CapEx perspective, it's not changing significantly. So I want to reassure you on that one. Why? Because in our CapEx, of course, in our CapEx plans, we are building our capacity with incremental lines. But the cost of setting the lines in one country versus another is minimal. So the big challenge for us is building the people capability in terms of running the lines and the workforce and the technology. So this is why it's a very important decision, in my view, more from an operating standpoint than a pure CapEx standpoint. So I don't want you to mislead you by expecting that it would be a massive cash impact by doing this. It's not at all. It's mainly the main challenge is make sure that we have the right people on the ground to make sure that we operate efficiently our lines if we are starting in the U.S.
Okay, thank you very much, Charles. That's perfectly clear. Thank you.
Welcome.
Our next question comes from Kate Rusanova of UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. So you mentioned that your revised CapEx guidance for this year reflects the phasing of Transform to Growth CapEx spending between 2019 and 2020. But I was wondering if you could give some more details around the decision to delay this CapEx spending compared to your plans at the end of the first half. Thank you.
This is Charles D. answering. So we said it's slightly different phasing, not just of T2G CapEx, but of CapEx overall. Just to clarify, it's just there is no specific decision to delay. It's just we want to make our CapEx in a proper way, meaning avoiding any rush, because CapEx, which are acceleration of CapEx, is not as good from an operational nor from a financial standpoint. Therefore, there is no deliberate decision to delay. Is just that when we review the phasing of our program of CapEx for this year, next year, on the forecast of what we can properly achieve, and of course without delaying in any manner the delivery or T2G results going forward, it's simply our vision today that we will spend a little less CapEx this year. Of course, there is some carryover into next year. That doesn't mean that next year necessarily, even including T2G, our CapEx would exceed 4.5% to 5.5% of sales. Simply, it's our vision today and expectation that this year will stay within the 5% range, including T2G.
Well, just to complete Charles, the answer, it's more an operational decision and the ability to manage all these new integration of new lines, because we cannot put just new lines everywhere at the same time. We have a constraint, that is the people constraints, to make it happen. So it's not only the question of ordering the lines and receiving and installing the lines, it's making them run. So that's probably also in a way some of the limits, just to be clear.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Eric Wilmer of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Two questions from my side. Femcare sales were down for the fifth consecutive quarter. As this trend seems to be somewhat persistent, I was wondering if you could perhaps shed some light on what kind of contracts were lost and how you're actually trying to turn the corner there. And secondly, how much was factoring at the end of Q3? Thank you.
What was the second question?
Factoring. On factoring, we don't disclose the number at quarter end. Simply, if your underlying question is whether factoring or increase in factoring has helped reduce net debt at the end of Q3, it's not a meaningful impact at all. If anything, factoring, I think, was lower at the end of Q3 than it was at the end of H1.
But I'll let then Charles answer the first question on FemCare.
So first of all, as you notice, FemCare is the smallest category of the company. So and we are, in terms of geographic footprint, really on the west part of Europe. And it's a retail brand business for us. So just to put things in perspective, it means that we start, by the way, to enter into the branded business in Mexico, for instance, and I'm sure we will continue over time because it's part of our evolution and the portfolio, and that's part of the strength we want to build on the category. But I would say, first of all, the overall trend, geographic trend, is negative on the category. And I would say some of our competitors benefit from other regions that are growing, and unfortunately, we are operating in this category in Europe, and that's a decreasing category. So that's one element. The second element is we were also suffering from service issues on some products in FemCare, as we mentioned, which creates some tensions on, like for instance, on the tampon business, where we had lost sales because we are not able to deliver. So that's the second element that is penalizing the category. The third one is we get rid of some contracts that were loss-making or not very profitable. So in terms of managing our portfolio of profitability within the different categories and subcategories, I have to recognize that we did a cleaning effort in some categories to take some of the products or contracts out of it. This combined with some, and it's minor, but some losses, that triggered the overall trend. Now, my expectation is that, of course, if I look at the overall performance of this, we are working on it to tackle it by rebuilding capacity on tampon, by working on new products in some subcategories of FemCare, the objective being to get back to growth, which is, as I said, a challenge because the trend where we operate are negative. And the retail brands, it's, by the way, the weakest category in terms of share of retail brands in Europe. Remember, by far, baby diapers are now significantly larger than the branded business in Europe. In volume, we get close to 60% plus on baby diaper. Pants, we still have huge opportunity on retail brand to grow. And in FemCare, it's the lowest category, so it's more in the 30s. And so by consequence, we have a lot of opportunities to grow as well. But it takes a while also because the consumer is less receptive to retail brand on FemCare than it is on baby diaper or incontinence.
Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Guillaume Demas of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Three questions for me. The first one is on Eastern Europe. Why is Eastern Europe lagging behind a little bit? Because whilst we saw some improvement, meaningful improvement in Western Europe, Eastern Europe deteriorated in the third quarter. So if you can explain what's driving this and, more importantly, what the outlook is for Eastern Europe. My second question is on incontinence in the retail channel. I was surprised to see a negative like-for-like sales growth in the quarter, given that this business had a mid-single-digit positive growth in the second quarter. So again, any color on this would be helpful. And finally, my last question is on baby pants. I mean, it's a clear growth driver for you, which I guess to some extent is reflective of the shift you're seeing in the baby care category. But wondering if you could help us frame a little bit this pants opportunity, particularly how big it is, how fast it's growing, and whether for the time being it's more a European initiative or if you've already started to roll out the category in your key emerging markets. And also if you can confirm that baby pants is accretive to both your top line via mix and your gross margin.
Well, Guillaume, thanks a lot. There's a lot of questions, in fact. There's more than three. It's, I recognize the smart way of asking the questions, but anyway. So I'll start with the first one, that is Europe. So yes, you spotted the growth or the lagging behind, as you said, in Europe. I think it's a combination of different parameters. In terms of managing some of our retailers that are European retailers, We have left some of the contracts to competition in some markets in Europe to focus our penetration in Western Europe. That's one element. That plays a role. The second is in Russia. I think we had a couple of contracts that we lost on the basis of, well, either profitability in our case or competitive players ready to drop price significantly, and we are not able to do it, or we are not willing to do it. And as a consequence, this had an impact on the performance of Eastern Europe. In parallel, as you spotted rightly, I mean, the opportunity is to restore the growth and to come back is mainly driven by the Western Europe part of the retail brand, where we are focusing a lot of efforts because it's the biggest part of the market. Huh? If you look at the absolute volume and value, it's clear that Western Europe is much larger than Eastern Europe at that stage. So it's very important for us. Your second question was about incontinence in retail and indeed the surprise of the like-for-like growth that is for the first time a negative one. Well, I think it's, and again, I will be cautious, but it's a combination of different parameters. So first of all, the share of retail brand in incontinence has been a bit stopped by the big efforts of the branded players on the category. When I say the big efforts is, of course, you have the U.S. players that are very active on the category and they are gaining share. So by this and gaining share, they are growing the total category of the A brands versus retail brands. So that has an automatic impact without touching our market share of the retail brand. As it's contracting a little bit, it has a negative impact on the top line. That's one element. The second is on the category evolution. I think we have lost not too much, but a couple of contracts that were driven by the baby contract losses that had also an impact. And in parallel, we are preparing initiatives in terms of innovation on the category of incontinence. So we are working to come back to growth in this part of the segment. The last part is well spotted indeed. Baby ponds are growth drivers. So it's namely a very important point that you refer to, because the big players are trying, or let's say one of the market leader is trying to convert the diaper category into pants category for a very simple reason, is the share evolution of the A brands in Europe is negative on baby diaper. Why? Because retail brands are growing in terms of share on the baby diaper in Europe. So one way of trying to limit the decrease is to change the mix and shift the consumers from open diapers into pants. And this is why a couple of branded players have been putting a lot of effort in promotional activity, on pricing, on distribution, on innovation, on baby pants. As a consequence, the consumers start shifting, and we see that the pants category in Europe is growing, whereas the diaper category, baby diaper, is decreasing. On the retail brand, one of our challenges is the capacity ramp-up to make sure that we catch up with the growth of the pants category on babies. So we placed several lines in the recent years to serve Europe. We will continue our investment level in building capacity on baby pants line in Europe, while because the demand is there. To close and give you a figure, because you ask for some perspective on the figures, as I said, in volume, the share of retail brand on baby diaper in Europe is above 50%, whereas on pants, it's rather close to 20-25%. So if I just, and again, it's a mathematical exercise, but the logic is there is the opportunity to double the size of the pants business for retail brand versus what it is today, by just saying, okay, if we get the same type of relative market share on retail brand pants, we should double the category. So that's very important. And as you rightly said, yes, it's accretive from a top line perspective and bottom line. Why? Because the average price per piece of pants is higher than the average price per piece of diapers. And as it is higher and the cost of goods are higher, but not as high as the price increase, it means that it's also positive from a gross margin perspective. So this is why we said in the previous quarters, and we continue to do it, that overall, one of our focus is to increase and the shift between baby diapers and baby pants. And to complete the picture, Guillaume, it's the same on incontinence. The pants products on incontinence are also accretive, both from top line and bottom line perspective. This is, by the way, if I link to a previous question on CapEx, it's one element that is driving our CapEx level high, because it's new category, or it's a category that is growing fast, and we need to build capacity. And you cannot convert a diaper line into a pants line, so we need to build new lines to do that. And just to be exhaustive on this one, on the baby pants line, as we said in the previous quarters, we work with Ontex Engineering, you know, as we are making our baby diaper lines. And we start also by doing, and it's the first attempt or the first trial, but we are also doing baby pants line that we hope that will help us to be cost-effective from a CapEx perspective and very efficient from a timing perspective to get lines faster when they are done by ourselves. So a very long answer to a long question. Sorry about that.
Thank you very much. And what would be the rough proportion of your baby care sales coming from pants today?
Well, this one we don't give it to you. Not because I don't want to give it to you. Is you know, this is if it comes public, and I don't want to give information to some of the competitors. So I think it's important that we keep some of the things behind the kimono, and we are not opening it completely.
Understood. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We will now take our next question from Sanat Sudarsan of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. Just wanted to come back on that CapEx question. Guys, can you just kind of help us with the magnitude we are looking at from the phasing perspective? Because your earlier guidance was at the top end of 5% for CapEx alone. And then you had T2G on top of it, and now you seem to suggest it's more within the range of 4.5 to 5, and then including T2G. So I just want to understand what the magnitude of the phasing is, if possible. And then secondly, more strategically, if I look at your Q3 margin bridge, it seems to suggest that your savings have dropped a bit, your rate of investing in sales and marketing has slowed down, but your FX headwinds persist. So if I look into 2020, do you have enough confidence, A, that you can offset this FX headwind next year with whatever levers you have? And two, if your growth remains muted as it is, would you prefer growth or would you prefer margin delivery?
On the CapEx side, in terms of the slight change in phasing that we've that we are reporting leads us to adjust our just outlook for the year. You know, last year I reported CapEx a bit over 100 million, so we expect this year to be slightly above what we reported for last year. You know, that's the kind of order of magnitude of what I can tell you. So therefore, this is not a massive shift from one year to another. And actually, we are at this moment working on the budget of CapEx for 2022. And as I said earlier, we'll take this into account. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we will have a huge surge in CapEx this year, just because we would review the phasing of CapEx for this year. So on the saving side, I'll leave it to Charles.
Thank you, Charles. On the saving, I think it's a very important question you raise, of course. I would say, first of all, in all transparency, it's very hard to forecast the Forex of next year, so the impact is very, in my view, is impossible to predict. What I can tell you is we are sensitive in procurement to the dollar rate. The dollar has been strengthening over time, that will impact us this year and in the recent time. I would say that next year we foresee that hopefully that we will be not only able to mitigate those Forex impacts, but that the tailwinds that will start rolling in should help us to be better, including the Forex impact. That's the first element. And the second question, the second part of your question, that is, do we prefer volume to margin improvements? I would say I'm Mr. Both in the company. I want to get the two as a principle. So I would say the difference is, how do we manage the volume? It's very important to reflect that the transformation of the company since 6 years has been to increase the share of business outside of Europe. I think you noticed that. And we made two elements in the strategy. We not only made acquisitions outside of Europe, but of course we grew organically on the basis of those acquisitions. the share of the non-European business becoming bigger. And very importantly, the share of the branded business is also becoming bigger. So if you look at the portfolio, as you can see in Q3, the size of the division AMEA becomes very close to the size of the Europe division, which was not the case 4 years ago. So over time, what is very important is, as we said in for the year, we said the EMEA division is a growth engine from a top-line perspective. And of course, in Europe, it will become another growth engine over time when we regain share. So we regain the contract we lost, and that's two different parameters. But that drives a willingness to continue the growth rates, and I think the pause we had last year and this year on the top line is not something we want to maintain over time. So the logic is to get back to growth on top line. And consequently, the second part of your question on the bottom line, which is driven by the gross margin, yes, if we expect to get input costs that are improving, we also expect to improve our gross margin. And as a reminder, we said there's different parameters to improve the gross margin. One is the T2G, the Transform to Grow program, and we'll get back to this at the end of the year. But the reality is it's a combination of elements that are within our hands in the transformation, manufacturing transformation, supply chain, innovation, commercial transformation, and elements that are part of the market trend, that is indeed the inflection point on the raw material should help us to be on the positive side as well.
Thanks, Charles. Very clear. Can I ask one more on that growth margin mix? Given my understanding is that Europe is definitely much more profitable than the other growth engines you have right now, how do you manage? Is there a meaningful mix negative impact from the growth you have in the branded business outside of Europe? Thanks.
So, yeah, I like the last question because it's the one where you try to get information that we don't give, that you know us for a while. So I'll try again to be, taking your statement, and I'm not commenting on the statement, but if you take your assumption, you should say that if you look at the glass half full, you have a great opportunity to improve our profitability in the branded business. And in geographies, by definition, that are more competing and where historically the profitability could be lower. So I would say directionally what matters is indeed managing the mix. And I think when Charles commented in the half year when we said we are on the low part of our profitability and we hit the lowest part of it, overall, over time, indeed, the mix in terms of geographies should come back to a reversal and be positive. Now, there is one parameter that is very hard to follow is the Forex. So, of course, at constant currency, and we can improve profitability by playing on the mix, on the channel, and on the products. But sometimes the Forex can be a derailer. So that's another element where we don't want to comment because historically we were euro-denominated for 75%. And now we are more related to other currencies. And those currencies are, in all fairness, rather volatile, with the exception of, well, not the exception, but the dollar being one of those, but many we are short in dollars. So the dollar has also an impact in every region because we buy fluff in dollar.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Iain Simpson of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. A few questions for me, please. Looks like raw materials were still a slight headwind for you in the third quarter, even pre-FX. Could you just talk us a little bit through the moving parts there in terms of what raw materials are up and what more raw materials are down, and perhaps how you see the phasing of that improving into 2020 when you said you expect to have a benefit? And then just on that FX impact on profitability, can you remind us how you calculate that? Because my recollection is that you adjust what FX has done to input costs, but you don't adjust for pricing. What do you do in sort of emerging markets where you have big currency devaluations and sort of the whole industry is taking pricing? How do you think about that? And then just finally, you talked about price competition in European diaper being driven by the main branded competitor. I think we can all guess who that is. Could you just break out Europe's performance into price and volume? Thank you very much.
So I will start by the bad news, but I will not break out the performance between price and volume, especially when we get into a smaller clustering or a smaller geographies, because we don't want to disclose that. But I can confirm that, yes, the price competition has been driven by A-brands. It's mainly one A-brand. Just because losing share, they continue to be very aggressive, and we've seen promotional programs like buy one, get one free in Europe that are triggering, by definition, reactions on the retail brand. Which is the good news is the retail brands continue to grow. Despite this promotional activity from A-brand, it's not stopping the growth of a retail brand. Now, I will go on the first question, and then I will leave it the second one to Charles, if he agrees. The first question, your first question was on the raw material headwinds on Q3. The answer is no. There is a starting point of an improvement in Q3 versus year ago. The reality is, as we said, is Q3 is being the inflection point, because there are 3 months on Q3. Q4 will be really the point where it starts. Seeing a decrease. And what I would say is 2020, with the information we have, which is also limited, and because this is depending on the indices. So we will enter 2020 with indices that are lower on, for instance, the fluff price and the C3 than a year ago when we entered 2019. So this should trigger, of course, a moderate optimism, because we are not managing the indices, as I said at the beginning. But this is where we said that this will translate or should translate into improvement from an indices perspective. Then after, there is all the negotiation between suppliers and so on. That is our internal cooking recipe, and we are not sharing. But the part that is visible that are the indices are getting better. Now, of course, we were at the highest ever, so it was it had to stop, and I think we reached this point, and it's getting down now. We've seen the latest indices that are closing the year on the fluff price are down. Now, the question is very hard to predict the next 4 quarters, so we are moderately optimist, but cautiously optimist as well. The question, the second one, was on the...
Forex exposure and Forex impact. I mean, our calculation is a mechanical one based on our transactional exposure in each of the countries, and also the translation impact when the financial statements are consolidated into euro. And this has not changed over the last years. As we said, we expect the overall impact for this year based on the actual, the first 3 quarters and of Q4 will be in the range of 22 million. So, of course, in high inflation countries, and Ontex is not behaving differently from our competitors, we do our best to pass input cost increases into our selling prices. But the what we can do is largely driven by our competitive positions. You know, of course, when we have stronger positions, it's easier for us to pass on those price increases. In some countries, we know we have for some time to sacrifice a bit of margin to maintain our volume. I think that links to a question one of your colleagues had earlier. Do we prefer volume or profitability in our business? We need volume for profitability. I mean, the trade-off is not that easy in a high volume business. You know, we have factories, we have overheads, and therefore we need to volume to absorb that. And that's why also, and from a more general standpoint, we're quite satisfied that this year, and this is our current outlook, we should be able to maintain our adjusted EBITDA at constant currency despite the large volume losses that we've recorded. That means that on the saving side, even though your remark on the on a slightly lower savings in Q3 show that you've been following very well our numbers and made the difference between the year-to-date for the first 9 months and the first half, your remark is correct, and this is one of our great challenges. And expect T2G is helping this year and will help even more next year. But we need T2G volumes and proper innovation. I think that's the name of the game for us in the coming quarters.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you. As there are no further questions in the queue, I would like to turn the call back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, this is Philip Ludwig. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us today. We're focused on delivering Q4 as described and preparing for another year of progress in 2020. Look forward to presenting our FY results to you next March, the 4th, 2020. Have a great end of the year and goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
a lot for being with us. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.